Peace.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, and going to reach out to Brad Free at Del Mar. And the weekend, of course, getting back the racing action. And after missing the previous weekend, and so an extra day of racing today for Del Mar fans. Brad Free, good morning. Yep. Nope. Okay, we got him. Nope. There we go.
Hello, good morning.
There's Brad Free.
Steve, good morning. How are you?
I'm excellent. And Brad, really an excellent 3 days of racing, and we're going to be treated to a fourth today.
Yeah, no kidding. It's nice to have horse racing back up and running in Southern California. We saw a thrilling edition of the San Diego Handicap on Saturday with Maximum Security in midcourt throwing it down through the lane. From a critical standpoint, you can look at the final time, 1:44.2, and the figure was decent because the track was slow. Maximum Security earned a 1:01. But it's the type of horse race that reminds you why we all like this sport so much. Two veteran horses, you know, giving it their all through the lane. And ultimately, you know, Maximum Security, early in his career, he just ran away from everybody. Now I think he's maybe lost a couple miles per hour off his fastball, but he's doing it because he's just a gritty game son of a gun. We saw it in the Kentucky Derby last spring. We saw it again in Saudi Arabia in February. And we saw it on Saturday in the San Diego. So many things went wrong for Maximum Security in the San Diego, his first start in 5 months. He had every right to lose the race, but he did not. He refused to get beat. He won the race by a nose. 10th time first across the wire from 11 starts. And he's a tough customer. Can he do a mile and a quarter in the Pacific Classic? I think there's enough reason to be skeptical of that, but he's not an easy horse to get past in the lane. It was a fun race to watch.
And I'm glad you zeroed in on it, because it certainly, you know, the big story coming out of the weekend, and obviously for a variety of reasons, this is a, you know, a lightning rod horse, and there's people who are going to attack and ridicule anything involving him. And literally the horse had not gotten back to the winner's circle for a photograph, and there were people saying, oh, he's not the same horse, he's just not the, it's like, you got to be kidding me.
Well, anybody who knows how to watch a horse race would probably beg to differ. You know, I mean, there's so many experts out there on Twitter that it's one reason why I try not to look at it very much, because a lot of people throw out opinions, and it's quite clear that they really don't have the foundation of knowledge that's necessary to watch a race and appreciate what a horse overcomes. How many horses do you see bust out of the gate, make the lead, get hounded from the outside, get shuffled back, get attacked again by another horse, suck back into third, re-rally, and win a race? That does not happen unless you are a very good horse. So, you know, I use speed figures, I use pace figures, a lot of numerical assessments to evaluate a horse's ability. But sometimes you have to be a little subjective and creative and go, what did this horse overcome to perform as well as he or she did? And in the case of Maximum Security, I don't care about the 1:01 buyer speed figure, which is 10 points below his career best. What I saw was a classy 4-year-old winning a race that in which he had a whole bunch of a litany of excuses to lose. So whether he's the same horse that he was when he won the Cigar Mile by more than 3 lengths, or the Haskell last year, the first across the wire in the Kentucky Derby, that remains to be seen. And as I kind of insinuated earlier, I'm not sure about a mile and one quarter for this horse as a 4-year-old. But if you hook up with the Maximum Security at the head of the lane, it's going to take an unbelievable performance to get past him.
There were other, you know, there were a few other elements that should be woven in, and you know, give some credit to John Sheriffs and Victor Espinoza with midcourt at taking that aggressive posture. When you think about what the alternate possibility was here, Brad, too, let's fold that in, which was he gets an easy lead and jogs around. That would have been preferable. Doesn't the horse come away with more positives than negatives from the way the race, you know, his race was essentially taken from him, and he had to adjust to a different set of conditions?
No doubt about it. The race unfolded entirely. It was surprising to a lot of people, myself included. I suspected that Maximum Security's stablemate Axeman and or midcourt would make the lead. But coming out of the gate, Abel Cedillo on Maximum Security, he looked like he was intent on making the front. So going into the first turn, I'm like, okay, if that's how you guys want to play this, good for you. Take the track. I don't think that anybody expected Espinoza to go on the attack immediately, having already been outfooted for the lead into the first turn. But Espinoza was riding to win. He thought he had one horse to beat. Turns out he was right. And Espinoza kind of rode the race like a match race. If I can put away Maximum Security, I can win the race on midcourt. He did everything right. He went on the attack, and he just wasn't good enough. But Maximum Security was a better horse on the day. Hopefully midcourt shows up in the Pacific Classic. I'd love to see these two hook up again, and we'll find out if either of them can go a mile and one quarter, because the way that midcourt ran in the Santa Anita Handicap, I should say, in March at a mile and one quarter, it looks to me like he might have some distance issues as well with regards to a mile and one quarter. So it's going to be a fun build-up to the Pacific Classic on August 22nd. And then, of course, we got the wild card thrown into the mix yesterday when Dick Mandela announced that United would be making his first start on dirt in the Pacific Classic after winning the Eddie Reed yesterday. So the Pacific Classic shaping up to be a terrific race with or without Improbable, who I would love in the Pacific Classic if he ran in it. I guess it appears that he might be headed back to Saratoga. But at any rate, it's going to be a fun build-up for the next 4 weeks going into the biggest race of summer.
Now, and we'll get to United in a minute when we review some of the Sunday action. And I suppose we can use Abel Cedillo and his involvement and his opportunity on Maximum Security. He was also criticized for reasons unknown that all he did was sweep the two graded stakes on Saturday, including a very well-measured ride on Laura's Light, Gary Barber's second graded stake of the day, when coupled with the win of 260 in the Celine at Woodbine.
Yeah, Laura's Light has really turned out to be one heck of a three-year-old grass filly. She was purchased privately by Gary Barber after her career debut last November at Golden Gate Fields in a six-furlong sprint. And Barber saw something he liked, and he bought her privately. And since then, she has emerged as, well, I guess she's the top three-year-old grass filly in California right now. Five wins from seven starts. She won the San Clemente. The thing about Laura's Light is she always gets a perfect trip because she makes her own perfect trip. She has tactical speed, and she's kind of the three-year-old filly version, in a way, of Maximum Security, in that she does not want to get beat. She will fight you off the length of the lane. I didn't think she could go a mile and one-eighth in the Honeymoon Stakes two starts back. Trainer Peter Miller acknowledged concerns about the distance as well, and she won by a neck, shortened up to a mile in the San Clemente, and won by three quarters. The third-place finisher, Warren Showtime, is worth following. She did not have a great trip at all. She ran well to finish third. At a mile and one-eighth, if they do meet again in the Del Mar Oaks, I think I might be leaning toward Warren Showtime, recognizing that Laura's Light is always going to be tough because she's got that forwardly placed running style. She gets first jump, and then you have to go and catch her, and that's not easy to do with a top-class racehorse like Laura's Light. So she'll stretch out again. to mile 1/8 on August 22nd, and skeptical handicappers such as myself will think that she's vulnerable at that distance. So we'll see what happens later this month. But in the meantime, it's just cool to appreciate a good filly in top form and one that loves to win races. Laura's Light now 5-7.
I should mention, you brought up Warren Showtime. I'll slip in our Beat Bick contest on Saturday. In fact, I used both of the two turf races, Saturday and Sunday, as the race of choice. And in the San Clemente, I liked Warren Showtime. And you were getting 5-1 and, you know, was coming, and Velez was making headway. But Laura's Light as the 6-5 favorite. We should also mention, and let me slip this in, 883 entries on Saturday, 208 winners, and 167 qualified to September to the final. So what, 33, 41 of you that had already beaten me on the first weekend came back and went with Laura's Light. Nice performance in there in between the two by Gwitty. Leonard Powell, who does a terrific job.
I actually liked Gidi in the San Clemente. I liked her at a price. I'm not saying she was the most probable winner, but
sure.
I've always suspected that she is a better filly than she has shown. The problem is she still does not know how to be a racehorse. She gets ranked behind horses. She pulls. She tosses her head around, and she is her own worst enemy. But she rallied from the back of the pack. She outran her odds, which is the only thing when you're betting a horse at 20-1 or higher, that's all you can really hope for, is that they outperform the parimutuel expectations. And Gidi certainly did. She had some self-caused trouble early. She was ranked, I think Juan Hernandez was riding her for the first time, but she was ranked first time past the stands, unsettled, but she still uncorked a nice little rally. She lost ground on the far turn, and she ran well in defeat. Can she do it again going a mile and 1/8? I guess we'll find out. But it was a good performance by Gidi, good runner-up performance. I doubt that she's going to be such a big price when she comes back in the Del Mar Oaks. And sooner or later, she's going to mind her manners throughout an entire race and maybe pop up and win a graded stakes race. But in the meantime, she ran well at a big number, and I was happy with her performance. I'm sure that Leonard Powell was as well. One reason I liked Gidi at a price is because the day earlier, Powell sent out Proud Pedro to win at $21 in a relatively small field of grass routers. So the Powell stable, it was in top form, and a couple of nice grass performances over the weekend, including San Clemente runner-up Gidi.
Well, and part of the Gidi story, Brad, and pause here for a minute, because Saturday may have been a kind of a corner turn for Juan J.J. Hernandez. Doubled his win total, second in the stake, and the performance on Rombauer. Congratulations to John and Diane Fradkin and to Michael McCarthy. When I call the Jay Pribman clip and save 2-year-old, compilation every year, the most important document in the DRF every year, here's why. You got yourself 35-40 if you were hip to Rombauer on Saturday in the opener.
Yeah, and a terrific ride. The thing about Juan Hernandez that I've noticed and have not watched him ride a lot, he's a recent arrival to the Southern California Colony, he saves ground, and that is so important, especially in a grass race, and he's patient. And that's exactly how he won the race on Rombauer the other day. He just sat and waited. I think the trainer, Michael McCarthy, was confident that the horse would run well. I'm not sure he expected a victory first time out. But under patient handling by Hernandez and a ground-saving trip, and then he swung out into the lane and ran them all down at a big price. So it was a terrific performance. And now McCarthy's going to have to sit on Rombauer until the end of the meet for the Del Mar Juvenile, because there's not going to be an allowance race between now and then. But a solid career debut and a nice ride by Hernandez, who's making an impact on this local colony. And, we could use a guy like him. He's a top rider from what I've seen so far, and looking forward to watching his Southern California career unfold as the summer progresses.
Well, he also, his other win was a maiden breaker as well in a turf sprint, where he went to the lead with Highly Distorted for Mike Pipey and Paymaster, with the Distorted Humor 5-year-old gelding. How about that?
I'm still kicking myself for Highly Distorted. Not that I was going to pick the horse on top, but this is a horse that could easily, you can make a case for. He had a race a couple starts back that was sensational. Did not run so well in his comeback, and that threw a lot of people off. You know, that's one reason why you need to dig deeper into the PPs than just the horse's most recent start. But Highly Distorted, he popped the gate, and he was gone. It was an impressive performance. Bet down, I think he was 15 on the line, and got bet all the way down to 5. So he was live, and, you know, Hernandez got out of the gate on this front runner and race over. So nice win by Highly Distorted. And it came a day after Mike Pipey's Steal the Diamonds was disappointing in the stakes race, the Daisy Cutter, but Pipey came right back and won a turf sprint the following day with that good maiden, Highly Distorted.
Well, and you mentioned the Daisy Cutter, JoJo Air in there for Andrew Farm and Wesley Ward, Drayton Van Dyke, Flavian Pratt aboard on JoJo Air, and you got 7-2. You mentioned Steal the Diamonds, who I originally, when she first showed up, I would call her Stealthy Diamonds. and there was also the four-horse Fleet Treat earlier on the card. Big Sweep, Mark Glatt for Rancho Temescal and Red Baron's Barn. A Krikorian bred, of course, because it's Mr. Big. And this filly, you know, kind of handled that trio in the Fleet Treat.
Yeah, Big Sweep ran well in the Fleet Treat. She won the race, and both trainer Mark Glatt and jockey Flavian Pratt afterward, they said she's winning races even though she's running on a surface that she really doesn't care for. Pratt has told Glatt that this is not a dirt filly. Well, she's never started on grass, but she's compiling. That was her second stakes win, I believe. And she did it, but Glatt's looking forward to putting her on grass, and he might have an opportunity a little bit later on in the meet. There's a cowbred grass stakes race up the road here at Del Mar. The name completely escapes me, but it's a cowbred two-turn grass race, and Glatt's considering at this point stretching her out, putting her on grass, and seeing if she can, you know, improve on her dirt form. And her dirt form's pretty doggone good, even though Pratt has said that she doesn't really handle the surface all that great. So looking forward to seeing Big Sweep stretch out on grass against cowbreds. I think it's called the Solana Beach later on this summer. But yep. We'll find out. In the meantime, Glatt has a very nice filly. And by the way, yeah, I know we haven't talked about the Eddie Reed yet, but Glatt trained Sharp Samurai, ran super, finishing second yesterday in the Eddie Reed. The trip was wrong for him. He was supposed to be forwardly placed. Instead, he was last, and he finished well against the grain of the race shape, and he ran well to finish second in the Eddie Reed. And I wonder if Glatt might take a crazy shot. If United is going to be one of the favorites in the Pacific Classic, deservedly so, he can get the distance and he trains well on dirt, but if United is going to be one of the favorites, then wouldn't you have to at least consider Sharp Samurai as a potential bomb in the Pacific Classic? He is another grass horse that has trained super on the main track. The question for Sharp Samurai, can he stay a mile and one quarter? But his runner-up finish yesterday in Eddie Reed, I thought was very, 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 very good, and kind of lost in the hoopla of United announced going to the Pacific Classic.
Well, and there's that man again, one Juan Hernandez.
Well, yeah, and you could probably say, you know, that was great ground-saving ride and all that stuff. I sense there might have been a little frustration from the Glatt camp after the race because Sharp Samurai, the plan was not to take back and rally from last. The plan was to be forwardly placed, pressing a modest pace, and then taking your best shot in the lane. But instead, he had to rally from far back, and I don't think that was the plan. So in this case, they're probably is room to maybe second-guess Hernandez's strategy. It turns out that the horse ran well, so that's all you can really hope for at this stage. But he ran well. He finished second. The race unfolded differently than they expected, and he ran well under compromising conditions.
Well, and speaking of horses, you can't question. I had Jay on Friday. We were talking about some spots, and I couldn't leave the Sunday action off without mentioning Sparkyville was back, who was one of my favorite horses in training, and that was the best 4-1 you're ever going to get. He is the coolest horse.
Well, it was the best 4-1 if you bet on him, and nice hit. I did not. You talk about, you want to see a good ride? Go back and I know Smith. You watched it already, Steve.
Yeah.
But I mean, Mike Smith put up a Breeders' Cup caliber ride. He sat back, he saved every inch of ground, he waited, he got through, he angled out, and he won in very clever fashion. A terrific ride by a Hall of Fame jockey and a tough turf sprinter. I can't get onto the same page with Sparkyville. When I think he's going to run well, he doesn't. When I think he might be off form, he pops up with a race like he did just the other day. So he's a good horse. There's no doubt about it. I would like to get into sync. There's some horses where you're not in sync with. There's other horses where you can kind of sense their highs and lows, and you know when they're coming up to a good race. You know when they might be tailing off. And then there's horses like in my case, Sparkyville, who I just can't get on the same page with. So the next time he runs, I might shoot you a text, Steve, and find out whether you like him or not.
I've just been I don't even know why I latched on to him when I did, but you know, he's versatile, and you know, turf sprinting or the main track, and of course he won the San Vicente if you go back to early last winter. He's very likable. He's a candy ride, and Jay Pribman clued me in, and Jay Hubdy frequently listens to the show, clued me in that the dam of Sparkyville was named for Lorelei Hovde, or Crone Hovde, as it were, and Lorelei Kay. And I thought that was very cool.
That's very cool. And obviously, this mare has turned out to be one heck of a producer. I actually did, I should clarify something, because when he won the San Vicente last year, I did like him that day. That
there
was the last time I was right about Sparkyville. But, you know, with his pedigree, he's supposed to run on anything, and he does. And he's just a good, good racehorse. Nice 4-1 in a small field the other day. I was on a different horse.
Well, I want to mention one other before we talk about today and what's coming up this week at Del Mar. Brad Free with us, everybody. I do want to mention the seventh race winner, and for a couple of different reasons. The longest shot on the board, Sweet River Veins, comes running under Pereira and Tim McKenna. And whenever Tim wins, and he's won himself a couple thousand races, Washington Hall of Famer, and his family, as well as the Hollendorfers, Janet and Jerry, have the farm, the ranch, up in Washington, and they work with traumatized, PTSD veterans. And so whenever McKenna wins, I always, want to point out what good work they do. And one other reason that Sweet River Baines had caught my eye was Bo Lane, one of our favorite horsemen, bred Sweet River Baines, 56-1, Brad.
Well, 56-1, $114.40, and the biggest bomb on the Sunday program, and it made at least one bettor ultimately very happy a little bit later on in the afternoon when that bettor hit the pick six. But Tim McKenna is no stranger to Del Mar. Do you remember the veteran grass horse Terry's Tomcat? He won summer grass races at Del Mar in 2015, 16. 17 and 18, that veteran Terry's Tomcat, and a couple of those times trained by Tim McKenna. He paid prices. You talk about a horse for course. Terry's Tomcat certainly qualified for McKenna, and McKenna put one over on Sunday. I mean, Sweet River Baines, he crushed the field by a length and a quarter. He won going away. It was a decisive win. He won like he should not have been 56-1, that's for sure. And a good solid win and a good horseman is Tim McKenna. So when he does ship down to Del Mar, you got to take a second look. It's not that he's won dozens of races at Del Mar. He hasn't, but when he does show up with the likes of Terry's Tomcat or Sweet River Baines, you've got to take a second look. I'm taking a second look after the fact and looking at that $114 mutual. Honestly, on past performances, I have a very difficult time making a case for this winner even after the fact. But I guess if you go strictly on trainer, maybe you could come up with him. And a nice win by Sweet River Baines. His first start since June of 2019. So McKenna had him ready to roll and in the right spot.
Well, and the ranch is Down the Stretch, and you can visit the website downthestretch.org. And the Hollendorfers bankrolled the concept, and off the track thoroughbreds maintained by the McKenna family and other horsemen, and they do wonderful work. And every chance we get to bring it up, we do. Brad, before we turn to Monday, the early draws, you know, they're getting out ahead of it, and McKinsey's presence in the Bing Crosby Saturday, certainly notable. Some thoughts about him going the shortest distance of his career, three quarters.
You know, I think a lot of it's going to have to depend on how the racetrack plays. We've seen a number of rally-wide biases, racing surfaces this summer, in which it looked like you wanted to come from in sprints. I'm talking about specifically where you wanted to sit, wait, come wide with the run, and that was kind of the winning style. And I think going six furlongs, that's probably going to be the style that McKenzie is going to have to use. You know, he's the best horse in the field. The sprint division in California right now leaves a little bit to be desired, unless Collusion Illusion continues his improving pattern. I'm just not sure that McKenzie is, I don't know, it seems almost like a desperation-type move. Taking a horse who's, you know, this is a horse who could have won the Met Mile a year ago, but not for a bad trip and a good rival named Matoli. But To turn him back to three quarters at this stage of his career, after, you know, being billed as a you know, grade one caliber two turn handicap division runner over throughout his career, and he's run well, probably not suited for a mile and one quarter, but definitely suited, you know, for slightly shorter distances, a mile and one eighth, and now he's going back to three quarters, which would be the shortest distance of his career. Everything's going to have to break right for McKenzie. Some of his recent performances have been a little bit on the suspect side. So, you know, depending on the price and depending on how the pace scenario unfolds and all that stuff, I got to think that I'm going to probably do what I normally do, and that's take a skeptical approach against, you know, the best horse in the race. And McKenzie will be the best horse, most accomplished horse in the Bing Crosby. And if he pops up and wins, that's fine. I was against United yesterday, and he popped up and won because he was the best horse. I thought the distance was wrong for him. The point I'm making is this. It's okay to take a stand against a short price, and it's sure okay to be wrong. You know, if you're wrong about a horse that pays $4 and change, so what? What if you're right? If you're right, you've eliminated the favorite, and now you're looking at some potential overlays. So I have to think that McKenzie might be up against it going six furlongs in the Bing Crosby, recognizing, of course, that he is the best horse in the field, and he might just sit back, rally wide, loop the field, and win for fun. But it's a very deep field this year in the Bing Crosby. Like I said, the sprint division is a little bit light in California right now, but we have a deep field, and I'm looking forward to diving in and handicapping the race a little bit more in depth.
some early thoughts about the shared belief and Baffert, who expected to see Uncle Chuck come east for the Travers, but entered him in here, and he ended up drawing the rail, of course, because Baffert trains him, and he has to, you know, Baffert's have to draw the rail. But all eyes on Honor AP and Cezanne to some extent, but 1,000 Words and Odor will line up as well.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that a new door might be headed back to Ellis Park. He was supposed to run in the Los Alamitos Derby early this month, and he got sick after he shipped down to Los Alamitos, and trainer Blaine Wright had to scratch him from that race. He's entered in a shared belief. I'm not sure if he's going to run in the shared belief. We do know that Honor AP is going to run, and we also know that Honor AP has emerged as don't think I'm out of school to say this, the best 3-year-old dirt horse in California. His win in the Santa Anita Derby was terrific, and it built on his excellent runner-up finish in the San Felipe. This is a horse that continues to improve. He ran super in his debut at Del Mar last summer, stretched out and won for fun. He was supposed to run in an early season graded stakes race at Santa Anita. He had a minor setback. Was on the bench until March, came back with that promising runner-up finish, and then he crushed Authentic in the Santa Anita Derby. He's only started 4 times. There's room for this guy to improve. And I know that the shared belief is not the end-all. This is simply a prep for the Kentucky Derby in early September. But to me, Honor AP is going into the race as the best horse. It's going to be a small field, so it's from a betting perspective, it's probably a race you might want to just watch. But Honor AP, right now, I think he's one of the elite 3-year-olds in the country. I think that's a very popular opinion that I happen to agree with. So it looks like it's Honor AP's race to win or lose, and whoever Baffert throws in there against him, they'll have to beat Honor AP. I'm not sure what to make of Cezanne because his number's really not that great. I know he cost a lot of money and he's been well regarded and, odds on both his starts, and he won clear both starts. On speed figures, he's really not that fast. A $3.6 million colt, and he's not fast yet. He's only started twice, but he needs to pick up his game in order to give Honor AP any sort of battle at all.
Brad Free with us. And Brad, before we go, of course, the action today, 5:00 Eastern, 2:00 Pacific at Del Mar, and a 10 race card. It's kind of a catch all race, a number of Calbred events in here, and some moderate sized fields on the early front of the open company allowances. A couple of opinions in here for today.
Yeah, I like the horse a lot today. He's in race number 4. His name is Rio Ocho, and he made his career U.S. debut May 30th at Santa Anita. He finished 5th by 3 lengths. This is a race that you need to watch on video to appreciate what happened. He was very keen and pulled hard early, and then he finally settled down, but he was blocked from the 5/16 pole to deep stretch. He took up at the 8th pole, and then he galloped out in front of the field. 5th by 3 lengths, and he ran out of his mind. It was a terrific U.S. debut by a gelding who had finished 2nd in a 14-horse field in his career debut last year in Ireland. He's coming back, and with a clean trip, I think he's going to be very tough to beat. You look at the jockey and go, well, geez, Flavian Pratt rode him last time out, and Pratt jumped off of Rio Ocho to ride somebody else. There's a backstory to that. And that is that Pratt had about 4 or 5 maidens to ride in this grass race, and the one that he chose ended up being a late defection from the race, the one that his agent, Derek Lawson, chose, I should say, was a late defection after he was entered. He came up with a minor issue, and so Pratt, by then, had already relinquished the mount on Rio Ocho, and that's why Abel Cedillo shows up. So, I mean, you always wonder when a top jockey gets off a horse, why did he get off? It's because he had other choices, and then the choices backfired. But if Rio Ocho gets a clean trip this afternoon in race number 4, it's a maiden route at 1 1/16 on grass, and he'll be very tough to beat. He is the 3-to-1 favorite, but it's a big field, and we might get 3-to-1, 5-to-2, and that would be okay for me. In the next race, race number 5, I like the second-time starter, South Beach gal, trained by Peter Miller, a second start maiden. And he's moving from grass to dirt. She is facing easier. She has speed, and I think that she's going to be long gone. She's 4-1 on the morning line. So a 3-1 shot, Rio Ocho in race 4. A 4-1 shot, South Beach Gal in race number 5. That's going to be my afternoon, right smack in the middle of the card.
Excellent. Now, it's just interesting, I think, from a business standpoint, too, because as Jay mentioned, Brad, this is kind of an experiment. They might add another Monday if the business is there today.
Well, I hope it is. And here's the thing about the Del Mar Racing Office. They have their finger on the pulse. They know the population that they have to deal with. Racing Secretary David Jerkins and Tom Robbins, Vice President of Racing, these guys know their inventory better than any other racetrack in Southern California. And that's why the races fill. That's why the condition book is often good. That's why the draws come out on time. The overnight is generally released by 1 o'clock in the afternoon, whereas at other tracks you have to wait until 3-4 in the afternoon before you see the draw. And it's nice to be handicapping and dealing with a professional racing office such as the one operated by David Jerkins at Del Mar. So hopefully today goes off well. I'm sure it will. The field sizes are big late in the card, and I'm sure business will be brisk. And if we can get a couple of middle prices home right in the middle of the card, I'll take Mondays any week.
Well, and it's a busy, the Monday ends up being busy. I think there's 14, there's 14 ovals running today. So, and that's with Colonial, actually one less because Colonial's postponed or canceled their opening day. But it is opening day at Presque Isle. So everywhere you look, there's something going on. Brad, this was fabulous. Thanks so much.
That sounds great, Steve. Well, I appreciate you having me, and I'll talk to you soon.
Without fail. Brad Free, everybody. Our first opportunity to check in with Brad a couple of weeks, sort of a week and a half. I don't know how you identify these first sets of cards exactly at Del Mar. What do we have? We've had six, right? Right? Yeah. Right? July 10th. Yeah, July 10th, 11th, 12th, and then we lose the fortnight, and we come back with the 24th, 25th, 26th. So six cards in. A few more, obviously. We have 9 at Saratoga. So summer still gaining some momentum. We actually whistled through 2 hours and 50 minutes, so we'll see about perhaps a little quick brief visit here, and I mentioned the opening days that one has gone by the boards because of the heat, and I have to turn and pull up Presque Isle and there we go. They got these first 3 days, and this card. There we go. All right. I brought it up with Dick Powell last week, but Big Full Fields, they start at 4:45, so a slightly different schedule. So they'll be running, their races will run pretty much concurrent with Del Mar, which kicks off at 5 Eastern. Okay? And to give you the rest of the action. Where we got beside that was great with Brad, because I didn't reach out for West Coast conversation. I will I can get rid of that. I will mention that there we go. There's the other Monday stuff. Canterbury Quarter Horse fans tomorrow. All quarter horse card at Canterbury tomorrow, starting at 5:30 Eastern. And they will have the low takeout pick 5 opportunity. The smallish fields, but it's quarters. So Be Aware, another one of their specialty cards, all quarters. Today's action, 4:40 Central, 5:40 Eastern. So I tell you, there's quite a bit of late afternoon. Now that I'm looking at all this together, there's quite a bit of late afternoon activity. Today with these Indiana starts at 2:20. Their late pick five starts in race four, 8 by 9 by 10 by 10 by 12. And then they wrap up with a quarter horse race. But very nice cards to start the week at Indiana, too. This is a pretty good day of racing, all in all. I don't know what we're going to. Tina's heading to Rochester, so I may be able to kind of play on the fly, you know, just sit with PPs and just take some shots. A little too late to do anything with another visit. So let's catch up on a few other results that I didn't. One race we did not mention from yesterday. We got pretty much everything in California. We didn't mention the Galilean. Winning the California Dreamin' yesterday. That was the last of the weekend stakes. Did we mention the Smiling Tiger Vertical Threat in there? Yeah, those were the other two stakes from the weekend. And there we go. There's Galilean, West Point, and Coolmore and Moore. The Uncle Mo colt that was a pretty expensive Barrett's purchase, now with John Sadler. Flavian Pratt aboard. He got 6-5, actually, out of that. I think we got the rest of those. And we talked about Cheryl Spite. I keep calling her Spites Cheryl. I could see that. And this I gotta ask Sid on Wednesday. These names. this one is Cheryl's Spite. And if he goes back to, if Mr. Fipke goes back to Spitestown with Perfect Cheryl, the next one will be Spites Cheryl. So that you'll be completely confused with Unbridled Forever and Forever Unbridled, right? That's his game. You know, I got to reach out to Gary Barber and have Gary join us and talk about his very good weekend with two graded stake wins and I think also the graded stake placement. Quick note, how about the two stakes at Monmouth on Saturday, a horse that we like and have talked to Pat McBurney about. Golden Brown wins the Irish War Cry. Well, Casey, you could try Todd. Todd can fit us in. That wasn't the ideal timing, but Todd Mostoller will join us for about 2 minutes to celebrate Presque Isle getting the season started. He's ready to. Yeah, I don't know what happened. Then yesterday, the Jersey Derby. Vanzi, the Verrazano for Michael Pino, and Paco Lopez. And Vanzi had run pretty well in the Kent and comes back and wins the Jersey Derby. So those were the two Monmouth races. And, you know, that off-the-turf race ended up, you know, helping a little bit for the cross-country pick five. Yeah, it didn't help entirely because, as I said, Kevin Attard, who joined us earlier, he knocked us out of the cross country. But yeah, for those that played it, cross country paid $1,277.75. Pretty nice. But it and that was with, you know, with a couple of easy horses, actually, with Volatile and Croatian in the Monmouth race. Todd Mostoller with us. And Todd, we got literally 90 seconds, but I wanted to make sure to publicize the kickoff to the season, the delayed start to Presque Isle. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Appreciate the time.
Not at all. And sorry we couldn't connect a little earlier, but, you know, after a number of delays off and running today in Erie.
Yeah, we're excited. Obviously, the COVID created chaos on a number of fronts with getting Presque Isle open, but we're open and ready for racing. We got decent field sizes for tonight, and we're anxious to get the meet started, and which will conclude the third week of October. We're can't tell you how thankful we are that we're going to be able to put the show on.
Well, and the first few days look good. Although I am curious, how much are restrictions affecting the racing office's potential to assemble fields in terms of ship-ins, because it is a place that, in addition to a good horse population, does count on Finger Lakes horses and you know, horses coming over from Ohio. You do get a nice mix.
Yeah, there are protocols in place for shippers. There's no restriction. Shippers can come in.
Good.
Everybody's got to get temperature taken, things like that, get a wristband, but we've got good field sizes, and we're hopeful that it continues throughout the summer.
What are they doing about patrons and owners?
Now, under the governor's provisions, there will be no patrons. When the governor put his provision in place for professional sports, he had limited to gatherings of, I believe it was 250 or more. Mm. And, you know, we can't guarantee. I mean, obviously, we're always looking, hoping for big crowds, but and it doesn't happen very often. But we can't take that chance. If we would exceed those limits, the Department of Health could come in and shut us down. And we need to make sure we take care of what we've the guidelines we've been given, so that the race meet goes off without a hitch for the remainder of the summer and into the fall.
Outstanding. Well, 4:45 post time, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, and then Thursdays add in on August 13th into the fall. Todd, best wishes to everybody at Presque Isle for a good, healthy, successful season.
Thanks, Steve. We appreciate it.
Not at all. Todd Mostoller, everybody, and the Pennsylvania HBPA. Thanks to Todd and Brad Free with a terrific, comprehensive catch-up on Del Mar, Linda Rice, Rich Migliori, Kevin Athart, and Steve Asmussen. Lots of good action today. Good luck to everybody, and we'll catch up with you tomorrow. Still plenty to do from the weekend, plus Andy Serling and much, much more.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the Races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.